Welcome to CCC's podcast series. I'm Christopher Kinealy for Velocity of Content. It's Friday, April 12th, 2024. Today, as we do each week, we check in with Publishers Weekly on news from the world of books and publishing. Andrew Albanese, PW Executive Editor, joins me today from New York City. Welcome back to the program, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
For National Library Week this week, Andrew, the American Library Association has released its annual Top 10 Most Banned Books of the Year list.
That's right. And this year's Top 10 list of most challenged books comes amid another record year of attempted book bans and an ongoing organized political attack on freedom to read. Once again, for the third year in a row, Maya Kobabi's Genderqueer topped the list of most challenged books, a list that is also once again dominated by books by and about the LGBTQ plus community and communities of color as well, authors from communities of color as well. These are voices that ALA officials point out that would-be censors very much want to silence. This list is released every April during National Library Week, which will close this year on Saturday, which is April 13th. And the most challenged titles list comes with the release of the ALA's annual State of America's Libraries Report, which highlights the broader work of libraries and librarians in their communities. And while the report notes the great work that librarians are doing in their communities, the challenge to the freedom to read once again stands out. And we're now, more than 3 years into this historic surge in attempted book bans and book challenges and this sort of organized political attack on libraries. And it really shows in the report.
What stood out for you in this year's top 10 list then?
So our listeners will remember that last month, the ALA released its preliminary book banning data for 2023, finding more than 4,200 unique titles were challenged. That's a 65% increase over 2022. And in the State of America's Libraries report, the director of the ALA's Office for Intellectual Freedom, Deborah Caldwell Stone, put this three-year ongoing surge in book challenges into perspective. If you look at the average number of unique book titles that were challenged from 2001 through 2020, that's two decades of book challenges, the average number of challenges was 273, she writes. The highest recorded number of unique titles challenged prior to 2020 was 390. That's, you know, challenges in 1 year. And in fact, in the entire two-decade span, if you add it all up, only 3,637 unique titles were challenged by censors. Only, I say. That sounds like a lot to me. But it's 600 less for that entire 20-year period than were challenged in 2023 alone. That is some shocking perspective. Now, this surge is often talked about as a freedom to read challenge, which of course it is. But I think we need to be really blunt about what this really is, which is an attack on people, right? This is specifically an attack on the LGBTQ community as well as communities of color. And if you look at the last decade of book banning, as you know, compiled by the ALA, you can see this political shift happening. And it really takes off once Trump sort of emerges on the scene. A decade ago, the most challenged book lists were topped by Sherman Alexie and Dave Pilkey. And most challenges came from one person. They were challenging one title. And what we're seeing now is lists of books challenged, shared on social media often. And these efforts to create legislation and bring things up at school board meetings funded by these dark money supported organized political groups that are masquerading as like grassroots parents groups. And they are all going after, not exclusively, but almost exclusively LGBTQ books in schools and in libraries, as well as, you know, books by Black authors and people from BIPOC communities. Once again, 7 of the 10 most challenged books on this year's top 10 list feature LGBTQ plus content, including all of the top 5. I should also point out that Monday's issue of PW is our annual LGBTQ feature. We'll have some stories addressing all of this, including the new section, a profile of an Iowa librarian who has just done some amazing advocacy work for more than a year. Iowa, of course, is where Senate File 496 was passed last year, a bill that would have banned LGBTQ content in schools, but for an injunction blocking the law, which was issued last December. But now last week in Iowa, we have another bill that's in the headlines, a bill that purports to protect religious freedom, but which critics say serves to legitimize discrimination against the LGBTQ community. And I just want to add that, you know, in 2024, we're, you know, Freedom to Read advocates are actually feeling pretty good about things. At least they were in the first part of the year, because we had a bunch of positive court decisions, including that decision in Iowa. But while those decisions are important, something that Deborah Caldwell-Stone points out in the State of America's Libraries report, there is clearly a lot more work to be done. And the ALA's book banning data from the last months and from this week, actually, are a stark reminder that advocates really need to stay engaged, because the attacks are not only on books, but they are on people, on entire communities, and these attacks are far from over.
Andrew, you attended the biannual Public Library Association conference last week, and you report that there was a strong showing for PLA in Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah, a very engaged and very successful Public Library Association biannual conference in Columbus. PLA officials were expecting about 6,500 attendees, and in the end, they wound up with close to 7,600 attendees, which is important, I think, for a few reasons. First and foremost, because not only are we talking about another conference this year that has greatly exceeded expectations after the pandemic. Remember, the London Book Fair earlier this year was a really strong event. We're getting word that attendance in Bologna was up 10%. That fair closed yesterday. And it was also a big bounce back year now for, you know, for libraries. After having a very small showing at LibLearnX in January, PLA has really put up some strong numbers. And here's the thing for me. This show in Columbus, the PLA show, wasn't without challenges. You know, the night before the fair got started, the opening reception at the Columbus Public Library was canceled at the last minute for a tornado warning. The weather was not good, and that always seems to inhibit people showing up on the day of. Didn't seem to be a problem this year at all. Days before the show, the opening speaker canceled last minute. They had to bring in a new speaker at the last minute to open the show. It was Shola Richards, did a fantastic job, by the way. You can read all about that on the PW site. And then Ta-Nehisi Coates, who was a very much anticipated speaker at the event, had to cancel his talk the night before he was scheduled to give it. And Librarian of Congress, another huge draw for librarians, Carla Hayden, was set to speak at the program. She didn't make it either. But here's the thing. I didn't find a single librarian who was disappointed by PLA, even with, you know, some of the no-shows of some very high-profile speakers. People at the show were much more interested in who was there, their peers and colleagues, than the speakers who couldn't make it. And what really stood out to me is that despite all the challenges that librarians have faced in the last few years, they all, to a person, remain incredibly focused on the work, right? They really count the small victories that they pile up every day in their communities, connecting readers with books, connecting people with information and services, serving students. And it's just really clear to me that, you know, in 2024, especially, we've seen that there very much is a place for these in-person shows, because this one was really positive for librarians. And we heard a lot from librarians who were telling us that they still love the work, are feeling a little weary from the attacks, but they're all together in person and drawing strength from each other. So well done for PLA. Now, the question I have is this going to carry over to the ALA conference in June? We will see. I think we all sort of expect a smaller affair for the ALA conference in San Diego, just because the travel costs to get to San Diego are a little more for many librarians. Also, there's been so many conferences in the first part of the year. Who knows what they prioritize their travel budgets for? But look, if ALA can deliver this kind of engagement and a good amount of this energy, it's going to be another step back for in-person meetings post-pandemic.
What do first quarter book sales stats tell you, Andrew, about how the year is shaping up for the trade business?
Yeah, so we're starting to get a lot of the numbers in for the first quarter. It's a good mix of numbers we have now, a lot of anecdotes too, and, you know, some good old-fashioned reading of the tea leaves. And suffice it to say that the first quarter was not terrible, and the outlook for 2024, I would say, mostly remains uncertain. Although we're hearing a lot of hope that the difficult actions of 2023 for the industry may be mostly over, and then we may be getting back to a sense of normalcy for the industry, which means flatter sales, but hopefully no more layoffs, and a much more stable environment for book industry workers who really endured a head-snapping couple of years, going from record sales in 2020 and 2021 to layoffs and retrenchment in 2022 and 2023. By the numbers, sales of print books finished the quarter down 1.7% compared to the same period in 2023. And down 1.7 is not great news, but it's not terrible either. And I will point out that as many industry observers have noted that sales in 2023 were down 6% starting in January. But that was because we really lacked a really big seller like we had with Prince Harry's Spare in January of 2023. The more interesting numbers, I think, come from the sales of the four large trade publishers that still publicly report their financial results, and which really pull some of the trends that we've been talking about on this program into sharp relief. You know, sales are bouncing back after dipping in the last 2 years, and that is good news. And the really good news is that compared to 2019, all of the publishers' revenue is up significantly, some as much as, you know, 20-25%. Still, we're hearing from industry leaders that they're still feeling uncertain and a little uneasy about the state of the business in 2024. And the question is why? Well, in a word, costs. As we've discussed on this show, the leveling out of the pandemic sales roller coaster came with no small amount of pain in 2023 in the form of layoffs and buyouts. And, you know, while sales are starting to tick back up, profits are not. And while consumer inflation remains stubborn, coming back down a bit in some cases, going back up a little bit, you know, month to month, executives at all the major publishers point to the need to really adjust to a new environment where the higher costs of doing business, including increased manufacturing costs and increased employee costs, are not going to come down, right? They're going to stay at a pretty high level. At least they're not going to come back down dramatically, and certainly not in 2024 for sure. Anyway, you can read all about this. There's a few stories on the PW site. Jim Milley has been writing about this for the last couple of days. He has a few pieces that will break it all down. But I think it's fair to say that no one is expecting significant sales gains in 2024. Hopefully costs can remain in line. But the general view is that, you know, flat sales and, you know, cost controls are going to be the path for 2024.
Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly Executive Editor, thanks for joining me with your reporting and editorial analysis.
My pleasure, as always.
Coming up on CCC's podcast, at Dartmouth College earlier this month, Princeton University Press Director Christy Henry joined colleagues from MIT Press and the University of Michigan to explore with students, faculty, and librarians the ways that UP's university presses are keeping up with changes in scholarship and readership.
Our mission is our compass, is the way I like to think about it. It's like having a through line or a narrative that informs all of our decision-making and that we always have to point back to. We're seeking books that impact, that engage. And while we also need them to sell, some of them at least to sell, because we're trying to run fiscally responsible businesses, we have an underlying commitment to global impact, to the world of ideas, and to make sure that knowledge is shared, and especially peer-reviewed knowledge. And what are not for-profit status does, and what this mission does, is empowers us and enables us to work with more than just a market input. It works with an impact input. So when we're making decisions, we're both looking at the fiscal plans and impact.
A field guide to university presses, next on Velocity of Content. That's all for now. Our producer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. Subscribe to Velocity of Content wherever you go for podcasts. Don't miss an episode of the show. The CCC podcast is also available on the CCC YouTube channel. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for joining me.